Something from last week. Yeah, we talked about angels. Mm-hmm. And those angels were... What do we remember about angels?
They were before us.
Okay, they were before us.
They have no physical
form. They're spirit beings, right? Okay. Why would God create angels? If he doesn't need anything, why would God create angels?
Messengers.
Yep. So that another thing would be they're there to serve him. Does anybody remember what the angels did when they watched God create?
They shouted
with joy, right? Yes, they rejoiced, and they were, as I call it, God's own cheerleading section. It's like a good way to I put that. I mean, it's not necessarily what he created them for, but yeah. So, how are angels different from God? Okay. Yep. So they are limited to what they can do because they are created. Yep. Not all powerful. Can they create anything?
Mm-mm.
Nope. Okay. Do they know everything?
No.
No, they don't know everything. Good. Okay. How many places can they be in at one time?
One.
Oh, man. This is good. All right. Were all angels created alike? I don't know. We talked a whole lot about this. We talked a little bit about Lucifer and what he looked like. But so we're all, they all have the same status, I guess I would say, or authority.
I think there's a hierarchy.
There is a hierarchy, yes. And why would you say that, Beth?
Only because I know that they describe them in different ways, using words like principalities and powers, and that there are used in different ways. So a few of them are named in the Bible, like Michael and Gabriel.
Yep.
And they are called archangels, but I don't know.
Yeah.
And then there are some descriptions of the seraphim. They're different ones, do different jobs.
Mm-hmm. And we didn't go into that much detail last week, but we did talk a little bit about that Lucifer, when he was created, or Satan as we know, he was the top, in other words, top dog in heaven. I mean, besides Jesus, or besides God.
Matt,
Jesus.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. It's probably really stupid, but God's all-knowing, all-powerful, he created all of us. Why would he create Lucifer? If he knew Lucifer was going to be a devil.
My goodness. That was a good question. Did anybody remember that one last week? I think we had that one a little bit. If God knew that Lucifer was going to go against him, why would he create him?
So we have the choice we have today.
Okay.
I was thinking maybe because it's a part of our free will to see, like, He loves us so much, he gives us both options.
Okay.
In a way. Maybe it's like allegory almost, like we're like that.
Well, angels have free will too, right?
They would have free will in the sense like they rebelled against God. So they would have that, but they don't have a spirit like we do. So there is no need for acceptance of God's gift to mankind. There would be none of that. They don't need to. So let's go back to that's the thought that why would God create him, and knowing that he's going to do something wrong. If God was to create and created beings, whether the angel beings or us as human beings, which we haven't got to that point yet, if God was to create beings that only did what he said, then basically God created robots. In other words, that just you program them, what you put in the computer comes out of the computer. I mean, somebody who computer programmer puts something into this computer here, and whatever they put into it, it spits it out, right? So this computer does not have a mind of its own. Now, I know there's something called Wilson, or I saw it advertised the other night on TV.
Oh, I saw it advertised.
And it's analyzing a basketball player. I forget what it's called. It's a commercial and some sort of smart computer. Well, somebody had to put the information into that computer, the stats, statistics of the basketball player and everything else, for this computer to talk back and say, hey, it did not happen on its own.
Right.
Did not just create itself. So again, what goes into the computer comes out of the computer. And God is the same way. And I think today when we go through this class, this lesson here, which talks about God's attributes and how his attributes are revealed, I think some of those questions that you're asking will be answered. We won't necessarily deal with the direct question of why did God create Lucifer when he knew, if God knows everything, he basically created something that was going to reject him and go against him. Which, if you really want to narrow it down, you could say then God created something that was evil or flawed. And is that the case?
No, because Lucifer wasn't evil when
okay.
God first created him.
Okay, very good. That's very good. Yes, God is everything God created has a purpose and a reason behind it. God just don't create something without a specific purpose. Huh?
Perfect in its own right.
Yes, and so, and he does, and that's where this free will comes into, John, that you were talking about. And so, yeah, we'll get into that a little bit in lesson 5 and 6, which may make a little more sense there, Joanne, about that and seeing that. Lesson 5, we're going to get into where God creates Adam and Eve, and then lesson 6 is where we bring the holly branch that we've been talking about. So, and about today we got flowers, so we'll see what comes out of that. Well, not quite. Yeah, it's not quite. So, all right. Well, that's good. Any other questions or thoughts before we get into the lesson? Yeah, we talked about that earlier. And Lori's like, no, but it is now hitting me in the eye, so I think maybe I'll go grab that.
But he's getting so big. Yes, you are.
He's got
pickups,
so he's grown again.
What? Why? Why? He's cute. Oh, he's so bright. What, sweetheart? What? What?
Oh, yeah. That's better. See the TV a little bit better, too, probably. All right. So, first thing, we're going to go to Genesis. And we're going to talk about that God is a great designer. You look at these flower petals here. I went and pulled them off the rose bush out there, so nobody can get on me about that. But I think for every flower you take off of one of them things, they grow 5 more, the way knockout roses grow. But somebody read Genesis 1:3. And we've already kind of talked a little bit about this, but we just want to reemphasize it again.
And God said, let there be light, and there was light.
Okay, so the first phrase there, and then God said. Who's God talking to?
Himself,
okay. Now remember, there are 3 parts to God, or 3 personalities, or 3 persons of God. There's God the Father, God the Spirit,
and God
the Son. Yes. So we have 3 parts. There's 3 personalities or persons to who God is. So God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. And so when he's talking there, he's not only talking. Now, we also mentioned that it could be there was angels present because he created them before this created. So he might have been also speaking to the angels. You know, it might have been a group of angels around while he's doing this. We don't know. We just know they saw and they worshiped. But how many were there? Anybody remember how many angels at least there were? At the very least?
It says 10,000 times
10,000. Yes, and that was what? 10,000 times 10,000. And then another 1,000 on top of that times another 1,000 on top of that. It was like 100 million angels at the very least. At the very least. And we there's got to be more than that. Well, I don't know if there is more than that, but at least we know there's at least 100 million angels that are in the spirit world. And so we have this picture there, and he says this. And in Psalms 33, 6, it says this. And I'll read that one since I didn't get anybody to grab that one before we got started. Psalms 33, verse 6, and then 8 and 9 says, all right, Psalms 33, verse 6, and then 8 through 9 says this. By the word of the Lord the heavens were made, and all the host of them. By the breath of his mouth he gathers the waters of the sea together as a heap. He lays it up in the deep storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. For he spoke it, and it was done. He commanded, and it stood fast. In other words, the writer of the Psalms here, Psalms 33, is emphasizing the sovereignty of God, that God is over all, he is in control of all, and there's nothing above him. And when God says he spoke it, he spoke it. Now, this is what he said, let there be light, and there was light. This light was not what we see right now coming through those windows. This was not the sun. This was a light that just came about. I don't know that we can describe this type of light, because all we see, or what we associate with light and darkness, is the sun and the moon, which come a little bit later here when he creates them. But has anybody ever seen light that does not, I mean, besides light like this, that comes naturally outside, that does not come from the sun or the moon?
How about, yeah, clouds, but they would, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They would be reflecting the sun and the moon. But yeah, so it's very hard to say that we could actually describe that. And so when God created this light, it was spoken to light. Let there be light. Can anybody do that?
Nope.
Well, maybe not, if we go over to the light switch and turn the light switch on, and someone says, let there be light, and you flip the light switch, and we got light. No, it's not the same thing. But again, that's exactly what happened here. And it's, why can't we do that?
Because we're not God.
Well, we're not God, yeah. But we don't have his power. We don't have his power whatsoever. And so when someone says that God has no power over anything, just this little verse alone demonstrates how much power God really has. When you, has anybody ever been into an area of where, I think we talked about this a little bit last week, a dark cave where it's so dark you can't see your hand in front of your face, mm-hmm. and then you flip on a light switch or even a candle or a flashlight, does the whole cave get lit up? If it's in one area. I mean, power goes out at home, you lose electricity, and when you lose your electricity, you have this darkness in the house. Even though you know where things are at, you still might stub your toe if you're not careful. But as soon as you light a candle, there are still different areas in the house that are still dark.
Right.
The candle doesn't, but the darkness immediately around that candle flees. And so God here creates light. And then in verse 4, he says this. Before I say, why do you think God would create light? Why wouldn't just leave it dark until he created the sun and the moon?
So the angels could see.
So the angels could see? I don't know if I'd go along with that one, because they were there. They saw him when he formed the earth, and so the earth was formed beforehand. Yes.
There's many different kinds of light other than the light that we see.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole phenomenon of nature.
Mm-hmm.
And in additional, there's natural light and then there's spiritual light.
Okay, right.
And a lot of times people who have seen angels and so on from heaven, or Moses when he was next to God, you know, his face was shining with light.
Mm-hmm.
So God himself is
Mm-hmm. Is light. When we get done here, the class, we're going to read a chapter. It's not part of the lesson, but we're going to read a chapter or a few verses out of this chapter that has just really been impacting me the last couple months. And I say it's been really speaking to me, and it talks about this thing of light. What is another reason why God might create light? I mean, when you think of darkness, what do you think of? So, in other words,
when you think of darkness, you think of evil, and light is...
Okay, yes. I mean, and a lot of evil takes place in the dark. Sin, we haven't got to that point yet, but sin in the world is dark, okay? And it's oftentimes hidden. It's not out in the open. It's not something we can always see. And so there is a real reason why God would create light, because it, like Elsie said, it reminds us of God himself, because he is light. And not only that, but we as humans need light. If we were living in darkness all the time, our bodies miss the vitamin D and the vitamin C and all these vitamins that come from light. If we don't have them, we eventually cease to exist. So you have this picture of light being there. And then he says in Genesis 1:4, what does it say?
God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness.
Okay. He's divided the light from the darkness. So I get this picture that you have light, and then you have darkness. And there's this wall, or this, I mean, that's in my mind. That's how I picture it. I have a picture of light over here and darkness over here, and it's a dividing factor, okay? It's that's how I visualize it. I don't know if that's how it was, but that's what I picture. He says he separated light from darkness, okay? But then if you read verse 5, what does verse 5 say? Okay, so God called the day, called the light day, and the darkness night. Now that gives a picture of that you have something like we got right now. It's still daytime out, and then when the sun goes down, it's darkness, and he's calling that night. When does the day actually start?
At midnight. A minute past midnight.
Oh, that's what that's how our time says that, right? We say sunrise, right? That's when we associate. I get up in the morning, I'm running at 5 o'clock, and I see the sun come up over the thing. We say that. What does God actually say the day actually start? Well, let's read it. What's verse 5 say?
When it became light, it was day.
It said God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day. When does God's day start?
Morning. It's actually saying
evening. Evening's first. Mm-hmm. He goes to the evening first. As a boy growing up, I never could understand this. I never could get this picture. But when I would go, I was at a search and rescue school, and at 6 o'clock on Saturday night, the drill sergeants, when we were going through basic training, could not put us in push-up position or make us do anything, even if we did something wrong, until Monday or Sunday night at 6 o'clock. And I couldn't sit there and figure this out. And one day I chanced to call home, and I was talking with my dad on the phone, and I said, Dad, I can't understand this. From 6 o'clock Saturday night till 6 o'clock Sunday evening, they're not allowed to do no push-ups, nothing. It was a rest day, they called it. If we acted up or did something out of line, we didn't march right, whatever, no push-ups. You know, we were like, what in the world is going on here? And Dad said, he goes, well, that's probably because they're probably using the principle that the day starts at night. I said, what do you mean day starts at night? He says, well, Genesis, God says the morning, evening and the morning mark the first day. So technically tonight, when you go to bed, depending on what time this takes place, I don't know, is when God actually says your next day starts. Now, we don't look at it that way. I'm not going to sit here and make a theological big discovery that, hey, we got to now say Sunday night starts at 6 o'clock or whatever. But here's how God looks at it, and he says, it was very good. It was good, right? So and what does God saying by when he says it was good? Well, I think it was good is in the previous, or at the very beginning of that, and says it is good. When God says it is good, what does he mean? Yeah. Right. At this point, there's no evil in the world. There's nothing. It's good. It is good. God said it is good. And when God says it is good, in Psalms 18, verse 30, it says, as for God, his way is perfect. So when he creates something, and it is good, there's no fault. There's no blemish. There was nothing at this point in the earth that would have said, that's not quite right. I better tweak, you know, the time, or I better tweak the actual day, the amount of time the light stays in place. No, God did it once, and that was it. He didn't go back and say, hey, I need to make an adjustment here. How many of you make an adjustment when you're sanding a board or digging a flower bed or something? Wait a minute, you look at it and you say, wait a minute. Or if you're making a pie or a cake, wait a minute, I forgot to put the baking soda in. Or whatever. You tweak it a little bit. You tweak your recipe. There was none of that. God said it was good, and it was done. He didn't do anything after that with the evening and the morning or the day and the night. All right, let's keep going. The second day, let's see what God does on the second day. Genesis 1, 6 through 8.
And God said, let there be an expanse between the waters to separate water from water. So God made the expanse and separated water under the expanse from the water above it. And it was so. God called the expanse sky, and there was evening, and there was morning the second day.
Okay. So the expanse, or in some translations would use the word firmament or atmosphere, it would be another term for that. So the atmospheric space that was around or surrounding the earth, if you look at it now, you can only see a fraction of that in the sky, the heavens. You can't see the entire expanse that he was talking about there. And so when he did that, he expanded it. What does it say he would put in the expanse? Water. Okay, now, there's tons and tons of scientists. They'll say all kinds of things about this. There, you know, some scientists will say that the water's not referring to clouds. Others will say that this is when God created the clouds, put the clouds into the sky. Some will say that it was a canopy. God created this canopy over the earth that water rested in above, and because when we get to the story of Noah, there had not been any rain on the earth. So they were saying that this was another body of water, that there was a canopy blocking it, and when the flood came, then all that water came down, and that's what created the flood. We also know that when we get to that story, we'll be talking about different things. There's different aspects to that flood. It didn't just all come from above either. But God somehow placed water above, and he divided it. And then he went to the water that was on the earth. And it says that he also split it. So now he had water above and he had water below. Then let's see verse 9 and 10 say. That talks about what God does. Okay, so, and here we go, then God said, he then says to the land, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, So he just says that, and then all of a sudden you get the entire earth that's covered with water right now. All of a sudden, the waters begin. And if you look at the map over there on the wall on our world today and our earth, I don't know if the outlines of the land were like what you see now, because the flood would have changed some of our footprint. But water just begins to move back. What are you going to say, Elsie?
I guess the theory is that there was one piece of land at that time, and that it broke apart after the flood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's different takes to that. Answer in Genesis or creation. If you ever get to go to, I've never been there myself, but the Creation Museum, with that, and you get to see some of that stuff. That is, there's things like that that they talk about. But a body of water separating and going, receding down, whatever, and here comes dry land. Now, it says dry land. It doesn't say what happens when you see water go away.
Mud.
It's mud. When it's no reference to mud here. It says, let there be dry land. So he called. So in other words, water receded, went to its place that it needed to go to. How in the world does water know where to go? I mean, if you pour water right now, if you take your drinks that you have on the table and pour it on the table, do you think the water will go where it goes to wherever you tell it?
No.
It's going to go to the fastest point, whatever the angle of the table is, whatever the floor is off level. It's just going to roll there. Yeah, that's not how it was. The water knew where to go because God spoke to it.
God commanded it.
Yeah. And we sing that song a lot of times. Even he can calm the storm, or he knows how the water hears and answers to him. Here's a picture of that taking place right here. And God called the dry land earth, or... and the gathering together the waters, he called the sea. So here God makes the oceans, all our vast bodies of water around. And then he says the same thing, and it says, and God saw that it was not quite right.
Yeah, it was good.
It was good. Yes, it was good. Very good. There we go. And then the next thing that God gives us right after this, and again, see the progression here of how God is a God of order and how he creates these things. What's the very next thing he creates? 11 through 13.
Then God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth, and it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, the seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the third day.
Okay, so on the third day, he not only creates the seas and the dry land, but he also then says, let the earth bring forth grass and herb and seeds and fruit trees of every kind. And then the earth just starts springing up all these trees and grass and just bountiful. So I went out and picked up one of these things here. Inside one of these flowers, you've got all these little, where the pollen sits and the whole nine yards. But I didn't actually grab a seed. So if we tried to plant this right now, would it grow anything?
No.
No, why not?
Because it doesn't have a seed.
Doesn't have the seed. So anybody know anything about seeds? A little bit?
A lot.
What can you tell us about seeds?
They have to be planted, proper conditions, and then they have to germinate.
Okay.
And it's all so, perfectly set. It's all perfect in its own right.
Yeah, so let's say you take a seed and plant it upside down.
And
it still rights itself.
It still rights itself.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Let's say you take a seed and plant it upside down, and then you plant it in a bucket, a metal bucket. And you take a torch and you begin to heat it from the bottom side instead of the top side. So you know, because seeds go towards the heat, so it's light. If you go out and watch the corn out here, you can tell when the corn wants water. The leaves go up, right? And you can always say, it needs rain. we've had all this rain, and I was driving by here the other week and saw, man, the corn's already reaching. We just had tons of rain. Why is it reaching for the sky already? It's growing towards the light, and it's needing water. But if you heat that up, will the seed then go out the bottom of the bucket?
No.
No, it always goes towards, it always grows up. It always will right itself. And to this day, scientists cannot explain or do not understand how that seed reverts itself with the gravity. In other words, it's like the seed doesn't understand gravity. You would think if you plant a seed the other way, it should grow the opposite direction, not turn around and start growing out underneath of it, right?
Okay. I've seen it. Plant a bean seed wrong way.
It goes the other direction, right? It goes. It's just the way God creates things. They have an order to them. They have a thing. So, you know, you'll never see a fir tree producing roses or a rose bush producing thorns. Well, no, they'll have thorns on the rose bush. You'll never see a rose bush. You'll never see a rose bush taking pine cones and making pine cones off of it. You just won't do that. However, how does that explain then if everything is a God of order, how does it explain you can take a peach branch and graft it into an apple tree, or vice versa, an apple branch and graft it into a different type of fruit tree, and you can get two different types of fruit?
There's a tree in New York that has 40 different fruits on it.
Yeah.
I've seen photos of it.
How is that?
God.
Why is that? Why would something allow that to happen? Do you think that took place here when God created it?
Well,
okay, hold on. What does it say here in the verses, Elsie?
The Bible talks about a tree that has 12 fruits.
Uh-huh. And that's in heaven, right? In heaven. Yep. But here on this earth, when God creates it, what does it say here? It says it brought fruit after its kind.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you have different varieties. You often have, you know, I don't know how many varieties of rose bush. This is the knockout roses. They look like roses, they're not real roses, but it's called a knockout rose. It's not what I would consider a rose, like you would buy in a store or something. There's different varieties of that. What's it mean by that? A lot of people will say, well, okay, how many, there's no physical way today that you can put two of every kind of animal in the ark. I mean, we've got how many different types of dogs today? It would be a big ship, yeah. I mean, and so when God created, it does not mean that God created every single animal that we see today. And what I mean by that is the trees. It does not mean that all the apple trees that we see today, the different types of apples you can buy in the store, were the same apple trees like they were when God created them. No, they were perfect.
They're hybrids now.
Right.
They were better back then.
Hold on to that thought when we get to Adam and Eve and when they fall. Because after the fall, things change. It's never the same here. In this situation, in this time, the third day of creation, everything is perfect. Everything has no blemish. And so we got to remember that when God created, and it says he created after its kind, we can't picture what that looked like. You can kind of imagine, but we will never be able to grasp what that really looked like because everything was perfect. Okay? Does that make sense? So,
why are trees so important for us?
Why are trees so important? That's a good question. What do we use trees for today?
Oxygen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if he didn't create the trees, we wouldn't be able to live. We wouldn't have the air that we're breathing right now.
Right. They do. They take the nitrogen and circulate it and recycle it. I'm not a scientist, but similar to that.
At night they do it too. So
mm-hmm.
That kind of goes back to that first thing.
Mm-hmm. Elsie?
I was reading an article about genetics. That in the original creation, all the DNA information for all the things that exist now were in that original.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part.
Yeah.
Some damaging mutations that get in there.
Yeah.
But it's like when it used for an example, there were two types of animals that produced dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So all the DNA from all of these different types of dogs were in those two original dogs in some form. So you can go forward with it and spread out, but you can't go back.
Right. Yeah, we can never go back to the original thing. Every human being has the same in your DNA. You can trace it back at one point or another. Even if you're a person's of a different race from someone else, a different background or culture or different area, they all have the same thing in them within this DNA. It's just part of it. But you have a uniqueness about that DNA that links it to yourself. But they do connect. There's five types of dirt in the world. There's also five basic races in the world. So when you look at that, and when I say that, there's God is a God. The things about God that even after a perfect creation, there are still things that link us to God, okay, and link us to each other around the world, okay. So when you have these type of things in here, and this is where you can go off. Well, you can't prove to me, or you can't say to me that the trees that we have today were back here at the original. Or at creation, they may not have been the same looking trees. They might have been 500 foot tall. I don't know how tall these trees were. They were trees. The sequoias out in the west, you know, the big redwoods, hundreds and hundreds of years. I don't know how many years the oldest tree is now anymore, because I know the oldest one at one point had fallen over. It used to have a big hole cut in. You could drive your car through it. That one fell over. But it's thousands and thousands of years old, these trees are. And when you look at them, you sit there and wonder, okay, thousands and thousands of years, were these trees, did some of this trees come from the seeds that, the trees at creation? I don't know. Were they around what creation? Don't know. Yeah? Would have been cool. So, the whole thing about this is that God is the master designer. And if you look at it, everything has its order. I mean, if God would have put the trees there first before he put the dry land, it would have been a mess. And so God did these things in order. Let's go on to the next one. While you're getting ready to read the next thing here, if we were to, I was going to give someone, put the one at everybody's table, but then I thought, that'll make a mess. If we were to take this flower and start peeling petal off the petal off of here and put it in my hand, I'm going to put the flower back together. Anybody ever done that?
No.
Well, why not? I should be able to do that, right? Let's just see. There we go. I've got four more over here. Anybody want to try what? You know how many times you would have to throw that up in the air to get it to go back to its original shape?
You couldn't.
Why not? In a Rubik's cube, there is so many quintillion ways you can formulas that you can get the Rubik's cube to fix itself. You know, if you turn it so many times, but there's so many different algorithms to get that. Well, quintillion. I don't even know how many zeros a quintillion is. But it seems like you can get that eventually, right? So if I throw this up here a quintillion times, it's eventually going to just go back together.
You can't create things.
Well, I'm not creating it, but just at one point, it'll eventually get to the shape that I need it to be. Not that you're aware of. Well, I would love for some of you to take a couple of these flowers home this week and do this every day. And wake up in the morning and tell me when the flower gets to that position. Take a picture of it, post it on Facebook.
It's smashed.
Maybe we could
use a sewing machine.
A sewing machine. There you go. There you go. There we go. Sewing machine. Yes, sew it back together.
Probably assemble the petals.
That, you can't. There's no way. And we could spend our entire life sitting here going like this. if the flower petals would stay the same over and over again, or taking a set of marbles and rolling the marbles on the table and telling the marbles to go here or there. Marbles that just fall randomly, they're not going to be able to do. And you can take them, pick them back up again. They will never fall in the same order unless there's a channel or there's something they're falling into. Try it. You'll never get marbles, and you roll the marbles out, they'll roll all over the place, put them back in, roll it back out again. It's impossible to get marbles to do that. It's the same way it's impossible to take flowers, peel them off, peel them apart, or take two of them like this for that matter. And maybe that's making the odds even better now. I got two now that I can, and then throwing them up, and oh yeah, that's great. You'll never do it. It's absolutely impossible. And so when God did that, and he created those things in the order that they were created in, there's a specific reason for that. And it wasn't like this, well, I'll just throw the trees out there. No. God has a reason. He does everything by design, and he creates it that way. Did God need the trees?
No.
The seeds in the grass?
No.
Nope. Who needed them?
We did. People, humans.
Yeah, but we're not here yet.
He prepared it.
Oh, okay.
He knew we were going
to. Okay, just I want to make sure we're all on the same page there. Yeah. All right, 14 through 19. Who wants to read that?
I can read that.
Okay.
Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth." And it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the fourth day.
All right. So we got the sun, moon, and stars. All the other heavenly bodies that were placed in there. Jupiter. I'm not even going to be able to name all these bodies of... What's some of the names of some of the Saturn,
planets.
Jupiter, Mars, all these different suns that are out there.
He created
them, and he put them in their order. And we know that if the Earth is at a 23-degree angle from the sun, if this 1 degree off and we go 22 degrees, we're either going to burn up or we're going to freeze. It was placed in a specific and perfect pattern. When you see on Facebook and someone says there's going to be the certain type of moon, because based on the years of turning the Earth and the way the moon's closer to the Earth, or they'll say you get a solar eclipse where the sun and the moon cross each other at the same time. That's what you get to see based on how the Earth is rotating. All those things, the Earth moves around those, the sun and the moon. They don't move. The sun and the moon stay in the same place. And they don't go anywhere.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. No, the sun and the moon are in their own place. And when you look at the sunset and the sunrise, you think, oh, the sun's going down, the sun's going up. That's the Earth rotating. So in wintertime, your Earth changes. The Earth changes its axis. Doesn't change the degree. It changes the axis of that. So now the sun so it's a little shorter. Your days are shorter. Vice versa. There's your seasons that God creates. Until God comes back, or until this earth is no longer, there will always be four seasons. We may not have them like we used to see them, but there will always be four seasons. God says that there will always be that. And they mark, it says, what does it mark in there when it said that? It says they are to do a couple things. What's the greater, two great lights? One is to do what? Okay, mark the day, mark the night. And so they're there to be a set reason. There's a reason why we need the sun, and there's a reason why we need the moon at night. And then you have all the stars. Stars have been around for years, and if you go to Job, in the book of Job, you can read through a tremendous amount of verses that talk about the different galaxies, and they talk about the different... I'm thinking like the Little Dipper and the Big Dipper, you know, and all that. The constellations, that's what I was working for, yes. Thank you. When you think about constellations, it talks about different constellations that are in there. And if you go to a museum that has stars in it, and you look around and you read your Bible and you say, oh, you can find those constellations that are mentioned in Job. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's not like somebody created those constellations that, you know, had a telescope. No, those were named beforehand, and they're found in the Bible. And so when you look at them, you can see how God created all these things. And constellations were used for shipping. It talks about that in here. Beforehand, they would use the stars to mark their way through at night as they were traveling on a ship. You know, in our country here, the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper, they were used to mark for when they would use that, follow the Big Dipper, and it would point you to the north. It would be called the North Star. You would follow that. You keep that as your focus point when their slaves were freeing from slavery. And they were going with the Underground Railroad, follow the Big Dipper. And so, yeah, different things like that God put those stars in there, and they're there for a purpose. They're there to rule over the day, and they rule over the night. And when God got done with it all, he saw that it was, once again, needed some tweaking.
No,
it was good. It was good. He was satisfied with his work. Isn't that a wonderful thing to know that God was satisfied with his work? It's not like he had to go back and say, oh, I'm not happy with it. Let me take a canvas and wipe it off and restart a picture all over again. Anybody ever do that? Cut your grass and... I don't know if you're real picky about your grass. I'm not. But I've seen people cut their grass, and they look back over, and the lines aren't quite, so they go back over it again, you know, to make these lines straight. I don't have time to do that. I mean, but an artist.
There are people.
An artist will do that. They'll look at a picture, and it's not what I want. Throw it off and start over again. God didn't do that.
Use a pair of scissors. If one blade was a little higher than the other one, he would... And back and look.
Oh. But yeah, you have to imagine like your haircut. Oh, little hair sticking out. Trim it off. I mean, imagine that, though. But God didn't have to do that.
But isn't that what he kind of did when the flood came? Because he saw everything that happened, and other than Moses and the animals he took, or Noah, it was a clean slate. Start over. Get rid of
the junk. He did. He looked at it and said, he didn't say that.
It wasn't what he did that was bad. It was what we had done. But then he did that. He kind of like.
Right. Life. But he didn't make a perfect world again. Okay. The people that he saved were still blemished.
Yeah.
And we'll see that what takes place right after the flood. But yeah, so I can see your point. That was kind of like, hey, God's going to just wipe this out. But I would have a little hard time seeing saying that that's what was transpiring, that God was going to restart his creation over again, because he saved eight people, and they were from the fall.
Well,
before.
As I meant, he saved a few, but then like a clean slate.
Mm-hmm.
The earth. Thank you.
Yeah. There. Oh, there you go. And Jeremiah 23:23-24 says this: Am I a God near at hand and not a God far off? Do I not fill the heaven and the earth? He's asking a question. He's asking a question, and he's also making a statement when he does that. He's saying, Am I a God near at hand and not a God far off? Do I not fill the heaven and the earth? God is everywhere. God's not afar off from us. He's all over. God is not limited to time, space, or matter. And there's absolutely nothing. God's not limited to that. And although God is present everywhere in the universe, he is distinct from it. He's not, even though he's everywhere in the universe, he is distinct from it. It's not just a... Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever really processed that God is in everything and everything is in God?
I think about it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really tried to grasp that.
Very overwhelming.
Yeah, it is. Very overwhelming.
God wouldn't be in everything. It would be his handiwork. Like his...
Good point there, John.
Yeah. I was just thinking, isn't that what they call like pantheism or something? To say that everything is God. Like, you know what I'm trying to... You understand. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I would go along with that. Yeah, that you're correct. And what I mean by God is everything or God is in everything, I'm not referring to that God is in... In other words, you can't sit there and say that God, that creation is God. You can't worship creation and say you're worshiping God. You can't do that. Creation is a creation, something that God created. That means that God's not in that. So handiwork, I would be a better word than to say that God is in everything and everything is in God. Yeah. His handiwork is what you see. You can't worship his handiwork. Have you tried doing that? Please don't do it. That's what God calls an idol. Psalms 104:19. We can admire, we can love, and we can enjoy his creation. We're actually told to take care of his creation, but we are not told to worship that. Psalms 104:19 says this, "Until the time that his word came to pass, though the word of the Lord tested him." Oh, I'm Psalms, that's 105. Whew, that's wrong verse. Man, a day. Ah, yes, 104:19. "He appointed the moon for seasons, and the sun knows it's going down." When you read something like that, why would it be written the sun goes down if the sun don't move? Why would the writer write it that way?
That's the way he saw it.
Yes, that's the way he saw it. We look and we call it sunset. Sunrise, we see that. The sun is actually not moving. We are moving, although we don't, because of gravity, we don't feel that. But that's how we see it. That's what we say. So when it says the sun goes down, oh, the sun goes down. They used to really think that the earth was flat.
Yeah, they did.
It is round. But that's what they used to think. Columbus and them were thinking they're always back in Columbus, you know.
Why do you think it was flat?
Just the way they were. But if you really sit back and look with pictures now and cameras, with the camera you can sit back and you look and you can see the curvature of the earth. Or planes. If you watch a chart of plane, next time you're on a plane, I think they got them now. It's been a while since I've been on a plane. The last time I was on a plane, they had a graph. You could go on the screen and you could put in your plane and select your flight and you could watch the plane going across the country, wherever you were, from state to state, and you could see it. And some planes don't fly straight. They fly up on an angle. So you might start in California and you fly up across the Midwest up top by along the top of the U.S. Border, and then you come into Philadelphia or Baltimore instead of flying straight across. They do that not only just for transport back and forth, but they do that because of the wind currents around the earth.
I was going to say, when we fly out to Las Vegas to see our son, it's a longer flight out than it is coming back.
Yep.
Somebody asked why, and it's because the earth is moving, so when you're coming back, you're moving with the earth.
Mm-hmm. And your and your wind and stuff.
Realize that. It's amazing the difference in the time.
Yeah. Now, man had to figure that out. God already knew that. He already knew the currents when the earth is spinning. You know, there is that. God is a God of order. He created this moon for seasons, and so they follow an orderly pattern. When you have something that follows an orderly pattern. David, when you build a house, do you just go out and throw up lumber? When you lay out a wall, do you just start nailing 2x4s together or 2x6s?
No, you lay it all out and mark it all out.
And you mark it out first. Why? Why do you do that?
So everything else works out.
Okay. I would call that you're doing something in order so that the next step is easier. Because if you just go out there and lay all your 2x4s down, I could just see myself now. Matt, go over and frame the wall up. Okay. And never be taught that you go 16 on center and you mark it and here's how you lay your studs out on the wall. I might have studs that are 12 inches apart. They might be 10 inches apart. The next one might be 2 foot apart. You'd come back along as a foreman and say, Matt, what in the world is going on? This is not how you do things. Everything is in order. This is an attribute of God. God is orderly. So when your kids tell you, Dad, this is, or you go home and you try to tell your kids and you say, hey, this is chaos. It's not organized. It's not orderly. You can go back and say, we are want to be organized and orderly in our lives because God is a God of order. It's an attribute he has. It's an attribute we should have. We should mimic who God is. And we do that in through things of like building cakes are the same way. Now, I know there's some good cooks in here that just throw things in the pot and it comes out this amazing recipe, right? I mean, everybody's done that before, right? You throw stuff in, you just got leftover, you start throwing it in or whatever, and it comes out this awesome thing and everybody loves it. More power to you. But normally when you make a recipe or you do something, you do it in a certain step, right? And so you have a good meal.
Italians, we just throw it all in.
You just throw it all in. So Italians are not orderly, so remember that. Not organized. Oh, yeah, this is good. All right, Genesis 20, or chapter 1, 20 through 23.
Okay. And God said, let the water teem with living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the sky. So God created great creatures of the sea and every living and moving thing with which the water teems, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the water in the seas and let the birds increase on the earth. And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day.
Okay, so again, we hear this phrase, according to its kind. You get all these different types of fish and birds and the variety of amazing creatures that God created according to its kind. Notice it doesn't list every single animal that's in there, but it does say according to its time, according to its kind. And that's 10 times in this first chapter, according to its kind. DNA... We just talked about this a little bit, of each organism was created and programmed by God so that it could only guide in the reproduction of the same kind. So when you look at DNA, although there are great variations in DNA within a DNA or within each kind of animal, so you got German Shepherds, a dog, you got a lab as a dog, you got a beagle's a dog, you got, you know, you can go down the list and name all these dogs. The DNA of a dog is a dog. Mm-hmm.
But then what does that mean when you see that they are crossing animal kinds?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because so it's possible you won't ever get an evolution of a new dog or a new DNA strain.
Well, at the Creation Museum, mm-hmm. they have a petting zoo.
Uh-huh.
And they have a zonkey.
A
zonkey. Never saw it before in my life. It's a zebra and a donkey,
that's crossbred.
Mm-hmm. But then that...
It's the DNA of a donkey and a zebra are from the horse family, from the horse lineage. Same way with a mule.
Oh, I was thinking two different...
No. So
DNA.
They're...
So when you're saying that, I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. What they're doing and they have one...
So you have different, you can have different kinds within, or very different variation within a kind. But you'll never get you're never going to be able to say, okay, out of this variation. So, like, mankind began to learn that if you breed a certain dog a certain way for a long period of time, the dog is going to be, might be a good work dog. They might have good nose, bloodhounds.
You couldn't get a DNA of a dog out of a cat.
No, exactly. And
I was thinking they were two different.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying they're in the horse family. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Your DNA would be linked back to the horse
like
or.
Vegetables. It's like hybrid vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Breed two vegetables in the same family.
But yeah. Link a fruit tree or the tree that's got 40 different fruits to it. It's from the fruit family, the fruit
they're,
kind.
They're all, stone, okay. They're all stone fruits. They're all peaches, plums, and
mm-hmm. Okay.
They're all like stone fruits. They're
yep.
all from the same kingdom of family.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they like kind of morph together.
Yeah. But think about this. Could any human being Could any human being create one living common sparrow from nothing?
No.
A common sparrow, as you say, on the ground, could we create that?
Nope.
No. Even the tiniest and most ordinary creatures are God's creation and incredibly complex. They are just a thing. Let me read something, a quote, and this is taken out of Michael Denton, Evolution, A Theory in Crisis. That's the title of the book, and this is a quote. Molecular biology has shown that even the simplest of all living systems on Earth today, bacterial cells are exceedingly complex. Even the tiniest bacterial cells are incredibly small, weighing less than 10 to 12 GMS. It's not grams, because each is in effect a veritable micro miniaturized factory containing thousands of exquisitely designed pieces of intricate molecular machinery made up together of 100,000 million atoms, far more complicated than any machine built by man and absolutely without parallel in the non-living world. So in other words, a cell, a singular cell, it will weigh less than 10 to 12 GMS. And in that cell, there's going to be 100,000 million atoms. There's no, I mean, and when you look at that, anybody ever look on our microscope?
Mm-hmm.
And you see, you take a drop of blood and put it in a microscope and watch what's moving around in that blood?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's phenomenal. Man's not created that. We've been able to come up with something to be able to look at that and see into and say, wow. To say that this is how man was made, and then tend to see all those living organisms in your blood, it's not possible. Because you and I couldn't throw this flower a million till the time we lived, till the time we died, and put it back together. It's just impossible. This demonstrates how powerful God is. That God is all powerful.
Isn't that like that guy that says, I don't know, I forget his name, but there's a guy that talks about the DNA that's shaped like the cross.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, and then the verse where God says, I hold it all together.
Mm-hmm.
So even
yep.
our very DNA is held together by God.
Yep. You and I are said we are formed in our mother's womb. He knit us together. Not a hair on our head is not known unknown to God. And I've got a lot of hairs on my head. And I, you know, when you brush your hair and you see it fall out, God has that named. He knows everything about you. You are unique. You are fearfully and wonderfully made. It's amazing what God has. What God has done. 24 through 25. We are almost to the end of the lesson. And this is the sixth day. Then God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth, each according to its kind, and it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to its kind, cattle and according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So Here God says it again, and he creates, and he's got these animals that he speaks into existence. And he created each kind with unique characteristics, capable of reproducing other animals of its own species. All that God created was good. Everything that God created is good because God is perfect, and everything that he would make is going to be perfect. And every one of these acts of creation, at some point or another, reveals some aspect of God's glorious character. When you read this, just these short few verses here, what aspects of his character stood out to you?
That he was methodic in everything he did.
Okay. Law and order. He's orderly. Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Perfect. Yeah.
And what he created, he wanted perfect also.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Patient.
Each day was
its own.
Okay. Interesting. That's one they don't list in here. I like that. Patient. Each day was its own. He had a reason for doing it. It's not like he could
have done it all one day, most
likely. Yeah.
He chose not to.
Why would you think God would take 6 days right now? We're on the sixth day. Why would you take 6 days to create everything? Why wouldn't he just do it one day?
Go into a house, you know, each day was building upon each other.
Okay.
And maybe if he built it all at once, you know, maybe it wouldn't have been, well, it would have been perfect, but maybe, you know.
That's very good. I think it's a very valid point that God took his time in making creation the way he wanted it made. Because God is God. He's all-powerful, right? If God's all-powerful, he could have just said everything and done it in one day. But if that means there's only one day to our week, then can you do everything in one day? Do you get all your work done? You don't build a house in one day, do you? No. When you work in your gardens, do you get everything done in one day?
Oh, no.
No.
It's a daily job.
God knew that we couldn't do it as mankind. We could not do everything in one day, so he didn't want us to rush through something. No one's ever said that in this class that I'm aware of, though. So it's very good. Each day was its own. I like that. That's a different aspect of God and how much he cares about us. God knows you're not going to get everything accomplished in one day, so there's no sense in rushing around and doing everything that you got to do. And I'm speaking to myself because my wife will tell me, take your time. My grandfather would always say, Matt, take some time to smell the roses.
That's kind of like what he wants us to take from it, too.
Yeah.
Is that we should be patient like he was.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think this, just looking at it today, these set of verses, is the first time I really thought how much God was also creating time for us, because he's outside of time.
Mm.
And so now he's in time, and he really paid attention to it, like, the morning and evening, first day, second day. He was just really setting aside, because we live in time.
Mm-hmm.
And here he's kind of laid it out. Here's how it goes. This is
right.
What time is. And it just seemed that he created time.
Uh-huh.
Right here.
Yeah.
But you know, Matt, wouldn't we? If we didn't have time, then it would be like eternity to us. We wouldn't have anything to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
We do get to heaven because we wouldn't, you know, there wouldn't be that difference like there is now. Now we have a time and we could say, you know, when our time's up, we have eternity.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have that.
Right, if you didn't know what time was.
Maybe
yeah.
Time's more of a gift than anything else.
Uh-huh.
You also think this was before the fall, so it's almost like it's blows your mind to think maybe he was kind of preparing a heaven,
uh-huh.
But then everything got destroyed, so he took obviously a lot of time to make everything beautiful and perfect.
Uh-huh.
And then it got messed up.
And they got messed up afterwards. Yeah. Yeah, I love that. These are the things that happens. Now all we did was read verses basically 3, I think it was. We started at verse 3 and went to verse 24, and whatever, about an hour here, I guess, a little over an hour. And you can begin to see how the Bible speaks to us and tells us about God. Mm-hmm. We just learned a ton about God in just 20-some verses. Time, we learned about that. We learned that He's perfect, that He's all-powerful, that He's everywhere. Psalms 19, verse 1. I'm going to end with this, and then I want to I'll read you this passage of Scripture that has been on my... It's not part of the lesson, but it has to do with light, so I'll read it. But Psalms 19, verse 1 says this: "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament," or shows His handiwork. "Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night reveals knowledge. And there is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world." Romans 1:20 says this: "Since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead." In other words, in creation, God's attributes are there, so no man is without excuse. So even if you and I had never had anybody tell us about God, God's attributes are built into creation. They're there. They're present. And that's what they were meaning, His handiwork, not refrain what I was referring to, like when I said that earlier. The Word of God gives us this deep understanding of God and His acts. It's who He is. It teaches us a lot about God, helps us to have a deeper understanding of who He is. That God, the Creator, the One who was there before the beginning, holds us responsible to accept His record of how He created all things. If God thought enough to create the world so that we could see His attributes, the things about Him, the unique characteristics of God, and He was willing to take the time to put them into creation when He created that to help us understand who He is, then no man on the face of the earth is without excuse when you think about it, because creation's all over. Any last thoughts before I read the last... And we are now, next week, to Adam and Eve on the timeline.
So if I was coming to you and I had never read the Bible before, how would you answer if I asked you, now Moses wrote this, right? He wrote Genesis.
Moses is the author of the first five books of the Bible.
So how does he know all this?
How does he know all this?
He was up on a mountain for 40 days right with God. Right? Face to face.
Yeah.
Great deal of communication.
But isn't that partly where our faith has to come into play?
Okay.